This is the Kitchen and Bathroom Design Podcast from Taylist Media in association with KBB Birmingham 2020.
Welcome to episode 3 of the Kitchen and Bathroom Design Podcast from Taylist Media. We're the home of KBB Review, Kitchens, Bedrooms and Bathrooms and Studio Magazines. And I'm managing editor Andy Davis, as always. But I'm afraid it's just me here today, sat all on my own while Bex, Lindsay and Elspeth are all out in the Las Vegas of the Midlands, that is Leicester. However, I will soldier on and hope that they're not on a train somewhere talking about me. So today we're going to talk about compact design, and we're going to look at how skilled designers manage to squeeze kitchens and bathrooms into small spaces. And specifically, I went over to Fulham, down here in London, to see Sophia Boone-Strand at Solar Kitchens and Rupert Colwill from Bathrooms by Design, both excellent, very knowledgeable designers. And I wanted to talk to them about how they approach small spaces, how they manage client expectations, and why the smaller the space is, the more important design skill is. So I'll hand over now seamlessly to me in Fulham, and I'll be back at the end. So Sophia, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about Solar Kitchens.
Well, Solar Kitchens came about 13 years ago when I needed a kitchen. So I have a previous life as a solicitor. I worked in the city, bought a flat and needed a kitchen. And I couldn't find anything I thought was worth buying. So I ended up going back to Sweden, where I'm from, bought a kitchen from there and brought it over. And when it was being installed, some of my friends saw it and thought, oh, wow, that looks great. Can you help us getting kitchens over from Sweden? So that's how the idea came about. And I set up Solar Kitchens 2006. And now we have two showrooms, one here in Fulham and one in Hampstead.
Okay, so be careful what you're saying now, Rupert, because you are sitting opposite a lawyer. So tell us a little bit about Bathrooms by Design.
So Bathrooms by Design, as is, has been around for about 12 years. It's family business. So as a family, we've been in bathrooms for 20, 30 years. Bathrooms by Design is mainly run by my brother, and we have recently opened our third showroom in Fulham. I guess there are a lot of bathroom shops that focus more on products and less design. So we try to guide our customer through the design element and then focus on the products rather than focus on products solely.
Yeah, it's there in the name, isn't it?
Yes.
So exactly. We're going to talk about small spaces and compact spaces today. So I'll start with you, Sophia, here, because here's the simple question that we're going to start with. Does small spaces equal boring spaces?
No, definitely not. It doesn't have to be boring at all. The main issue with small spaces is, of course, to make sure that you get in all your appliances, enough storage space and enough worktop space without completely filling up the room and making it feel too cramped. But it definitely doesn't have to be boring. And often when we do small spaces, we add in loads of different colours and materials and textures to make it interesting.
In bathrooms, it's slightly different, isn't it? Because I think people stick bathrooms in really small spaces. That's kind of what they do. And then there are under the stairs bathrooms and there are full size bathrooms. Are they boring to design, boring to look at?
I would actually say the opposite. Larger bathrooms are easy. Like, you can lay them out how you want. You can fit all the products the customer wants, and because you've got so much space. When you have smaller spaces, you actually have to kind of engage with the customer, hear their expectations, but then manage them. So they might want the largest bath in the world, but it's obviously not going to fit under your stairs. And I think that's really where you gain your kind of design skills, in the fact that you give the customer a solution that they would have never thought of themselves.
Well, that's an interesting part of it, isn't it? How much do clients expect you to be miracle workers?
100%.
Absolutely.
No matter the space, do they still come in with that long list of expectations and they just somehow expect you to fit them in?
I think what's important with clients is that you have to be upfront with them from the start, that what they can actually expect. And so when you design a kitchen, if you have 60 square meters or if you have 10 square meters, you still need all the appliances. You need your fridge, freezer, oven, hob, extractor and dishwasher. So if you have a small space, this of course fills up a much larger percentage of the space compared to a large kitchen. So the first thing when you start with a small space is to work out how to fit in the appliances and then have the conversation with the client about what their absolutely must-haves are in terms of appliances and storage, so you can be completely upfront from the beginning and work with them.
Do they literally, it's a 3 meter square kitchen, can I have an island, please? I mean, are they that sort of naive?
Well, people, a lot of people can't visualize. Most people can't visualize. We do it every day, so we can. But they come in with a plan, and it is 3 meter, and they think they can have an island. We are passionate about creating spaces that work. And also that was my original idea when I started Solar Kitchen, because when I went around and tried to buy my own kitchen, I didn't really get any good advice. People just putting boxes into a room without asking me how I wanted to work, how I wanted the kitchen to function. So we are very, very focused on making the space actually work. And quite often we have people coming in and say, we want an island in this space. And we would say, I can put it in for you, but it just won't work. It just won't work. My recommendation would be absolutely not to. And usually they do take our advice on it. But you do see designs coming from elsewhere where it's completely hole in the head. You look at it and say, you can't move around this island. Do you realize that? And clients just don't realize. They can't read plans. So that's where we as the designer really have a responsibility to help them to make sure that the space works, if it's big or if it's large. Small.
I mean, the nature of products in bathrooms is they are a certain size and go in a certain place. So, you know, do those people, are you managing people's expectations for, can I have a massive shower enclosure with an enormous great rain shower pouring down on my head under the stairs, please?
So I think it's very similar to kitchens. You look at what they want first, and you don't look at products for maybe the first half an hour of a consultation. So you're purely looking at what you need, what layout you can achieve, and okay, you're probably going to have to make a sacrifice on your 5x5 shower head because that's the size of your room. But once, if you hit that head on at kind of in the first half an hour, I think you're a lot more likely to gain the customer's trust and them trust you, because if you leave that till the last kind of, right, we've spent an hour, I love that, and then you say, well, you can't have any of that, they're going to walk out. So it's about getting in there early and just managing their expectation. Mm.
I think that's a very good point you say there in terms of trust.
Yeah.
Because we find it, the more upfront and frank you are with the clients from the beginning, the more they trust you.
100%.
So if they come in and say, I want this and that, and we said, that won't work. We can create you a beautiful space, but you can't have an island in here because it just doesn't work. Then if they feel that we are honest with them, they will trust you from every decision further down the road.
So when you first walk into that space, you touched on it a little bit, but what's your train of thought? Will you get your tape measure out and, you know, are you visually planning that in your head as soon as you walk in the room?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. So getting the measurements and to immediately work out, because most kitchens, well, we know what appliances, they all need a fridge, freezer, they all need sink, bins and a dishwasher and a hob. And that are the three things that needs to kind of be planned out from the beginning. So there is enough workspace in between and it can actually fit and be ducted out and plumbing can go out and that. So that's the first essential thing, is to kind of place these three items.
And what about you, Rupert? Are you thinking the same thing? You walk into that room, are you thinking, well, the bath's going to have to go there and the shower's going to have to go there?
So with bathrooms, it is very much dictated by actually the WC, because your soil pipe has to go out in a certain place. Generally, it's on an outside wall, so it is working out where the best place is for the WC and then going from there. With smaller spaces, generally, in a lot of bathrooms, you'll see WC on one wall, basin on another, and this kind of creates like a slalom, I guess. And it's not great for visually space. It doesn't visually look like a larger space. So we would tend to kind of position them next to each other to give you free space next to it. And then whether you've got a bath or a shower, you've then got that area free to dry, to do whatever you do in the bathroom.
Because what are the biggest mistakes you think people make? I've been to, particularly when you have WCs under the stairs and people have put them in themselves. Now, I'm 6 foot three. And they put the WC underneath the sloping bit.
Mm-hmm.
So if, forgive me for this, but if you're sitting down on it, you have to kind of lean forward.
Okay.
Because you're underneath this, you know, the slope of the stairs. And who thought of that?
Pass.
Yeah.
Because it is a pet hate.
Yeah.
But what I tend, so I do explain that to clients, and luckily we've got our own software that actually allows you to measure heights where you would stand. We can actually put a figure in of an average size male, which is 1.75 meters.
Okay, that I'm not an average size male, it turns out.
But that
actually, that makes me sound quite good.
That helps clients visualize it. And then when you say, look, you really shouldn't put the toilet there, despite what your architect or your contractor has told you, I would probably instead build a small boxing here, put your WC there where you've got full height, and then we'll run the pipe along that boxing and we will make a feature of it. Whether it's a half height shelf with some ornaments, or you can put the basin on there, wall hung tap, whatever it is.
I mean, the irony is here, I think the smaller the space, the more you need an expert to do it for you, to plan it out and design it for you. Like any builder can come in and make an enormous space, put a big island in the middle and it would look okay. But if you've got a small space, you really need to know what you're doing. And you know, I've been to ones where there's such narrow space to walk down, or the doors don't open because they bang into the, you know, the cupboards on the opposite. You know, the expertise is even more important.
Yeah, I completely agree, because the smaller space is, the more you have to cram in there, and you really have to apply some thought to make sure that you get everything in. And it also that you don't fill up the room too much, because if you fill up the room too much, it just will feel overwhelming. So it's that really delicate balance. And I mean, today it's easier to do because you have a lot of appliances that combination appliances. For example, you can get the steam combi oven, the micro combi oven. You have different types of dishwashers, the slimline, the drawers. So there are all sorts of different appliances that can help you to minimize the space taken up by appliances. But it's you need to know your appliances, what's out on the market, and what you can achieve, and planning it in quite some detail to make sure it will all fit when it gets there.
Well, I mean, that's part of it. You are ultimately limited by the products that are available to you.
Yeah.
And do you think manufacturers think of this stuff enough? Are there enough options available to you to be able to configure even the smallest of space into a usable space?
I would say certain manufacturers are better than others. So especially manufacturers based in the UK, they're generally a lot better at planning, let's say, short projection products, because UK bathrooms are generally smaller than, let's say, they are in Europe or America, places like that. I mean, America, their bathrooms are the size of my house. But yes, there is a huge limitation, which is where I think you said designing smaller kitchens is where expertise are needed, because clients will look at a space and go, right, the toilet can go right next to the basin. It looks like it fits, but then when they sit on it, their knees are hitting the basin, and like you said, or their head's hitting the roof. So I think it's really important that they get our expertise, and that's where they learn to trust us from there.
I mean, kitchens by their nature are quite modular. You know, do you get frustrated? I know there's obviously the range is increasing all the time, but is it a bit frustrating still having to deal with fixed sizes of things? I mean, I know you can do the furniture, but at the end of the day, things are 600 mil that way, and you kind of got to live with it.
Yeah, well, I mean, we have the luxury of being able to work with completely bespoke cabinetry sizes, and that of course helps, because you can utilize the space in a different way compared to if you use cabinets or modular sizes. So if you have a tall ceiling height, you can build all the way up to the ceiling if you want to. We can utilize a plinth base. We don't have to put in large fillers. So and in a small kitchen, because sometimes people come to us and say, but it's a really small space, do I really need a bespoke kitchen? And it's actually there where a bespoke kitchen is the best, because you can, every little centimeter matters in a small kitchen. But of course, as you say, some things you're fixed with, the depth of your appliances, they will be, a fridge will be 600 deep and you can't do much about it.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of these products are made to be sort of multinational. But of course, it's different for every country that you're in. I mean, in Sweden, there's loads of space and hardly any people, isn't there? Yeah. So yeah, and it's really cold. So you know, the requirements are different. Whereas here, we're in Fulham, incredibly expensive properties, but they're probably quite small inside. Mm. So you know, do you wish there was more sort of flexibility with the bits you can't control?
Definitely. And what would have helped us a lot would be if you had even more flexibility on the appliances. So, for example, today you can get a steam oven combi, you can get a micro oven combi. But could you imagine if you could get an oven that did all three things?
Yeah.
How good would that be for a small space? So you could have one oven and you could still cook basically everything there. And again, with things like fridges, it's 600. They're always 600 wide. Sometimes we wish we could get them slimmer and taller because that then gets easier to fit in. But there are only a few appliance manufacturers that do them today, and they are really, really, really expensive. So most small kitchens, it's just not worth spending £6,000 on a fridge or a freezer.
I mean, Rupert, if you were running a bathroom factory tomorrow,
yep.
what would you make? What would you make that would help you when you've got those tiny little spaces?
That is an extremely good question. I would probably develop a shower valve that can actually fit in a tighter space. Mm-hmm. So at the moment, if you want a nice kind of concealed shower valve, you're looking at 75-80 mil into a wall, which if you're in a small space, that makes a huge difference, and that impacts possibly the toilet, the basin, whatever it is. So if someone could design something that was more compact, because it's only a 22 mil pipe, I just don't know if they can make them wider and less deep.
Well, yeah, well, you're a lawyer, can we patent that?
Of course, I'll help you.
Okay, so obviously, it's very, the practical considerations of those small spaces are incredibly important. You've got to get the storage in. You've got to get the space in to move around. But how do you still make them designed? Like, put a bit of flair in there. How do you make them interior designed as opposed to just placing some product in the most efficient way?
Well, I mean, how we would go about designing a small space would firstly be to work out the client's absolutely must. What do you have to have? And, of course, if you look at small flats, often you also need to have a washing machine in the kitchen, which is another appliance. So you do the must-have list and the decide list, what they like, and try to be realistic of what they can get in. And then also very important, even if you want to utilize as much space as possible, not to fill up the whole area. So maybe not have wall units all across all the walls. Maybe have wall units slightly higher up and then have a slim shelf underneath where the clients can put some pots for herbs and some decorative things. And also work with materials. Small spaces, really good to use glass and mirror. I mean, mirror makes a space look much, much bigger. You can have a mirror splashback. You can put mirrors on back or sides of cabinets, mirror doors. So they are loads of ways to make the room feel more airy than it actually is, and then even if it's a small space, you can still have loads of fun with different materials, metal finishes, colors, and things like that. So it definitely doesn't have to be boring.
Mm. I mean, bathrooms is a case in point again, isn't it? Because you have to put a pan in there, you've got to put a bath in there, whatever it is.
Yep.
But how do you still make it feel like someone's dream bathroom if it's a tiny little space?
Similar to kitchens, it's about making the space feel as large as possible. I think customers get an idea online of what finishes they like, so whether brass, chrome, black taps, whatever it is, colours, tile colours. What they struggle to grasp is making the space feel big and understanding how to do that. So I think you touched on it with mirrors, having like a full width mirror above the WC and basin. People don't really think to do it. Not only could it offer more storage and the fact that they could be a mirror cabinet, it also makes the room feel twice as big because that mirror is reflecting the wall it's opposite. Other things is things like lighting, recesses that people just don't, when you show them, they're like, oh, wow, I wouldn't have thought of that. But it's actually quite a simple idea, and it's just bringing all of the things that are quite simple together that makes the space feel a lot bigger.
I mean, lighting's a very interesting point, isn't it? The effect that lighting can have to fool the eye into thinking there's things there than there aren't. How much do you build lighting into your initial designs, Sophia, to in these kind of small spaces?
Being Swedish, as you say, it's quite dark and cold most of the time of the year. Light is very, very important. So you have to think about that straight away. And one issue that we often see is when clients have roof lights, they don't really think about how light is going to be put in a roof light. It looks great during the day because you get a lot of light in, but in the evening that's just a black space. And then task light, obviously very, very important, so under cabinet lighting down on the worktop. And then what in Sweden is very, very important is the ambient lighting, having nice ambient lighting and not always having full-on spotlights, and so it feels like a room where you're doing surgery or something like that. So being able to think about that early on, so that you can move from having really good task light to being nice and cozy when you have your dinner.
I mean, lighting in the bathroom is so important, isn't it? Because it tends, you know, the default is just to have some spotlights in the ceiling. Yeah. They can completely change the mood of a room, obviously, and in very small spaces, they can make the whole room come alive a bit, can't they?
I guess the kind of issue is IP rating. Mm. So a lot of your kind of pendant lights don't conform with IP rating, so you have to be careful. But in terms of ambient lighting, like LED strips under basins, recesses, you can put LED strips in because they're IP rated, even if they're in the shower. And it really gives off a sense of space. So especially if you underlight something like a basin, because it highlights where the floor meets the wall, it gives that perception that the room is that much bigger because your eyes see the corner. Whereas if you have units down to the floor or just no lighting there, you kind of perceive that the room stops at that unit. So it is really key. Luckily, products like mirrors have lighting in the bathroom anyway, so you've got that as is. And what we tend to do is recommend a customer has two switches for a bathroom. So one would do your down lights, so when you're using the bathroom, but then you'd have another switch that operates all your ambient lights, so your mirrored cabinet, your LED strips, if you've got marker lights in recesses, things like that. And you can A, leave them on at night, so if you need to go to the bathroom at night, you don't get dazzled by your down lights. And B, if you want to relax in there, you can just leave them on, especially if you've got a bath. It's quite nice to not have the down lights on, but not being pitch black.
Okay, a lot of those kind of spaces for you, there's probably no natural light either, isn't there?
Around here, very little. Yeah. Because they're in the middle of the house. Mm. So yeah, they won't have any natural light. Mm.
And the other thing to add to that, of course, is to use dimmable lights, even if you don't have the possibility to have down lights or, pendants or something like that. If you at least can dim your spotlights, then that makes it much more cozy.
I mean, storage is incredibly important, isn't it? We touched on it a little bit, but the technology and the products available to increase the storage within a standard space is incredibly important too, but it's not cheap either when you want to get it all in there. How easy is it to kind of build that in a way that the consumer really understands?
Well, what we do from the outset is we discuss budget with the client, because budget is extremely important. And what's quite frustrating with small kitchens for the client is that they come in and say, oh, it's a tiny kitchen, so it won't cost that much. The problem is that you still need all the appliances, as you need in a big kitchen. You need your worktop that needs to be templated and mm-hmm. installed. You need your splashback, you need your cabinets, and you need the installation. And the installation in a small space is often much more time-consuming than if you have more space to work on. So maybe in small spaces, we can't get the tall units up into the flat when they're fully erected, so they have to be built inside the kitchen. And that takes a long time. So even if the amount of cabinetry is less, the cost, it doesn't actually differ that much, because you need all the other elements. But the beauty again of being able to do bespoke elements is that we can really utilize every single cabinet properly. So if you have a cabinet and the clients want to have cereal package in one drawer, we build that drawer so it fits exactly the cereal package. and then we can fit a drawer above it where they have their tins or whatever it might be. So we can go through in quite some detail with the client exactly what they need to store, the height they need in the drawers, so that we can utilize every single centimeter in that kitchen.
But then they'll have to eat the same cereal for the rest.
And say, what about the family size? Family size.
What if they want to switch from Rice Krispies to Cocoa Pops? Then they're in trouble, aren't they?
Yeah, they have to have them laying down.
Well, look, let's sort of conclude this here by with some practical examples here. What's the smallest kitchen you've done?
The smallest kitchen I've done is probably one where we basically had one cabinet, one base unit in addition to the appliances. Right. That was a very, very important base unit. But with that kitchen, what we managed to do...
So how big was it? What was the square here of it?
Probably about 3 by 2.5 meters, something right. like that.
That's a big bathroom.
That's a big bathroom.
Yes, but you don't need a cooker and a dishwasher and a fridge and a freezer. What we managed to do in that space was to squeeze in a tall unit that was very slim. It was about 200 millimeter, because there was a little sliver of a space behind a door where they couldn't really do much about, but we could squeeze in this tall unit. And even though they're very slim, if it's full height, you can get an awful lot of storage in there. You can get all your cups and glasses and wine glasses and also a lot of food storage. So that kind of saved that whole space.
Well, look, Rupert, as you say, that's quite a big bathroom.
Yep.
So what's the smallest space that you've done?
I think smallest is kind of misleading, because you get a cloakroom under the stairs and it's a meter by a meter. The smallest space to pack everything in, probably about 1.5 wide and maybe 2.5 meters long, but they wanted basin, WC, freestanding bath and shower. And it's possible, but difficult.
Now talk me through the logic of a freestanding bath in a room that size.
So, in my opinion, a freestanding bath is good in a smaller space, because generally the lips are a lot thinner on a freestanding bath.
Yeah,
so,
that's true.
If you get a 1500 inset bath, you're going to have probably, you're going to lose 15 centimeters just to the lip on either side. So, 7.5 on either side, maybe. You can get more expensive bath that's less, but you're always going to lose something. And also, if you have a freestanding bath, I mean, if you look at like a stone bath, for example, their lips are maybe 2 centimeters thick. So you're really utilizing, if it's 1500 bath, 1460 of it is bath.
Mm.
I would actually recommend it in a space like
that. That's true. And you can see the floor much more as well.
And you can see the floor, you can underlight a bath, a freestanding bath, and it really does look amazing. Mm. You would then in that space kind of position the bath in the shower, if that makes sense. So then it will make the shower feel a lot bigger than it is, because although the bath is down by your knees, you can still get your arms out, kind of wash yourself, and then your toilet and basin go next to each other.
Yeah, well, that explains why I'm not a bathroom designer, doesn't it? Huge thanks to Sophia from Solar Kitchens and Rupert from Bathrooms by Design for talking to me for a very nice morning down in Fulham. If you want to find out more about them, we'll put links to their websites up at kbbreview.com/podcast. As always, huge thanks also go out to our friends at KBB Birmingham 2020, who are supporting us in making this podcast possible. It's the biggest kitchen, bedroom and bathroom show in the UK, of course. And if you want to see who's exhibiting and you want to register your place, go along to kbb.co.uk to find out more. We'll be back in your feed with another episode of the Kitchen and Bathroom Design Podcast very soon, so make sure you don't miss it by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate and review us too, as it really helps other people find us. See you next time.